The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily. You can get to the live stream of the broadcast every single day at the trumpet.com website, thetrumpet.com/live. You can also submit some feedback to td@kpcg.fm. First, a programming note, and this may disappoint a few people. For the month of May and June, we're going to change the starting time for the live stream to 11 a.m. Central Time. That's 4 hours later than usual. So if you're in the UK, it'll be, 5 p.m., I guess, in the late afternoon, evening. If you're in Jerusalem, 7 p.m. Here in the central United States, 11 a.m., as I said. On the East Coast, it'll be at noon. And it'll be, a little bit later in the morning for those of you out west. So the reason we're doing this is we're setting up shop here permanently now in Edmond. And it is a six-hour earlier start. So we may go back to, there are some advantages to starting at 7, like during SEP, for example. You can finish the program and still be there for all the day's activities. SEP, of course, comes in July. But for the month of May, so starting on May 3rd, that's a Monday, starting on May 3rd, for May and June, the program will start 4 hours later than what you're used to. So I know there's some early morning fans that are going to be disappointed with that, but I think about three-quarters of our audience listens to the program on demand anyway, and we're going to do our best to try to get these programs posted just as soon as we can after the 11 o'clock show, so that if you get the on demand later in the day, hopefully it won't be too much different than the way it is right now. So, like I said, send us your feedback. Tell us if you're a big fan of the change, and well, you might have to wait until the change is actually in place. But a couple weeks from now, we'll give it a go and see how that it works out. Well, the other day I talked about the affliction, so much affliction, 2 Kings 14, as you know, and so little help. God says there's no helper. The affliction is so bitter, and as I've noted this week, this is something that God has prophesied. So in that sense, we're very thankful that we know the truth. But that doesn't make it exactly easy to watch and to observe the sickness from head to toe, Isaiah 1, from the top of the head all the way down to the toes. Sickness through and through, just to give you an idea of what we've been saying over the past years, several years. Great Again, the book, that's from 4, 5, 6 years ago. It says, do you have a favorable view of the founding fathers, the Constitution, separation of powers, rule of law, manifest destiny, freedom of religion, freedom of speech, free market economy, and America's role in World Wars I and II? He says, if you do, this is my father writing, if you do, then surely you are deeply alarmed by the state of America today. I mean, what do you think about the separation of powers? Here are these radical leftists, they now want to just turn the Supreme Court on its head. They want to pack the court with radicals. They want to turn the United States into a banana republic. That's what it amounts to. Welcome to Venezuela. Welcome to Cuba. Let's put four radical Marxists on the court. And of course, Republicans would respond in kind, assuming they ever got back in power. But the whole point of this, adding new states, Puerto Rico, Washington, D.C., getting four more liberal senators in there, the whole point of this is for them to grab hold of and to maintain control of all of the levers of power in government. And you think about what we've been writing over the past many years. America's been fundamentally transformed. That was in the March issue from last year, 2020. My father said the radical left and its anti-American Marxist ideas have virtually taken control of the Democrat Party. Democrats have taken to heart Barack Obama's pledge to fundamentally transform America. And look at the ways they want to transform it. They want to tear down America's history, America's Constitution, America's moral standards, America's freedoms. They want to redistribute the nation's prosperity, revolutionize its economy, and revise its form of government. They're doing it. It's like every day there's a major announcement. The court, and this is hardly a radically conservative court by any means. It's pretty much a centrist court. I'm talking about the Supreme Court. But in their minds, in the minds of Joe Obama, if it's not radical to the left, if they're not all Ruth Bader Ginsburgs, then we've got to do something to transform it. And that's what they want to do. They made it clear yesterday with all their big announcements. I'll play the clips here in just a moment. Saving America from the radical left temporarily. That's from 2018. My father said, we're getting a hard look at just what the radical left is willing to do in order to seize power and stay in power. They have no respect for the rule of law. They believe they're above the law. It's no exaggeration to say that such contempt for the nation's founding principles is a threat to the republic. Listen to Jerry Nadler. He's on the House Judiciary Committee, and here he is announcing yesterday their big plans, how they're going to fundamentally transform the United States Supreme Court. Clip one.
And it also will enable us to do justice and to rectify the great injustice that was done in packing the court. And some people will say we're packing the court. We're not packing it. We're unpacking it. Senator McConnell and the Republicans packed the court over the last couple of years, as Senator Markey outlined. So this is a reaction to that. It's a necessary step in the evolution of the court.
It's necessary, he says. We're not packing it by putting four Marxist liberals on the court. We're unpacking it. Okay. We should have put Oprah on the end of that one. They're unpacking it. That's how they're defining this. They're packing it with Marxist revolutionaries. They don't want anything in their way. They want to ram their policies, their agenda, right down our throats. And so if the Supreme Court provides any resistance, we've got to make sure that we get another or two or three or four Ruth Bader Ginsburgs on the court. Look at what the court didn't do. All through the election process, I think there was, if I recall right, I think there was just one case that maybe the best case that President Trump had on the obvious election fraud. And there were two justices, was it Thomas and then Alito? I think Alito's the one that wrote the dissent. Two out of nine. And to call someone like John Roberts a conservative, they're going on and on. It's 6-3, six conservatives, six radical conservatives. Not hardly. But they want it more radical to the left. And for them, I mean, what they see as normal is this radical, it's like my father said, it's been taken over, the Democrat Party, by these Marxist revolutionaries. Here's Senator Markey talking about adding the four seats to the Supreme Court. Clip two.
We have a stilted, illegitimate 6-3 conservative majority on the court that has caused this crisis of confidence in our country. The Republicans stole two seats on the Supreme Court, and now it is up to us to repair that damage. Our democracy is in jeopardy today because the Supreme Court's standing is sorely damaged.
So it's the Republicans that stole seats. So you notice when Democrats talk about stealing, it's fine. They did it for 4 years. Russia hoax. He stole it. I don't know what Putin has on him, but somehow they rigged the election. Stealing, stealing, stealing. And then now here's Senator Markey saying it was all stolen. The Supreme Court was stolen. Why don't they get canceled for that language? You talk about stealing as a conservative, and you get blotted out. It tells you something about these radicals. They want no dissent. They don't want both sides. They're not trying to restore balance to the court. They want to squash any and every form of dissent. That's the goal. That's the objective here. This is satanic. This is a satanic spirit. And it's so strong. It's like God says in 2 Kings 14. There's no help. There's nobody to stand up to them. Now, there's probably going to be a few moderate Democrats, if there are any left. Maybe Joe Manchin and Sinema in Arizona. It's going to be hard to get this through, but you'll notice they're pushing on anyway. I mean, this is what Joe Obama wants. He wants every Democrat to be a radical leftist Marxist revolutionary. And even if they're pushing forward with this a little too soon, assuming that it's probably not going to go through, in another way, it's like a threat. It's like they're blackmailing the Supreme Court justices. If you don't, you better make sure you watch what kind of rulings, how you rule on certain cases. Because if it goes against what we want, we'll destroy you. Look at what they did to Kavanaugh. They knew they didn't have the votes to stop Kavanaugh, so what did they do? They destroyed his reputation. A spectacle for all the world to see. They borked him. That's the message. You stand against us. You lean just a little bit in the conservative direction. Then you become a target. You certainly don't want to support Trump. If you do that, we're coming after you. That's what's behind this, as I say. It's pretty satanic. There was an article we had. This is actually several years ago. Richard brought this to my attention. The Radical Left and the American Constitution. It's from January of 2009. And we were talking then about the fairness doctrine, the so-called fairness doctrine. This is Obama coming into office. And yeah, there's too much conservative talk on talk radio. We've got to try to move this fairness doctrine to where it's just balance. That's all we want. And as we noted in the article, they don't want balance. They want to squash the dissent. They want to blot it out. We were talking about blotting it out back in 2009. And now you look at all these scriptures today that we brought to your attention at the Trumpet.com website. That has been their objective. That's the devil's objective. He wants to blot out the name of Israel. Just blot it out. Just tear it down. Just destroy the cities. Take down the statues. Get rid of the Constitution. Shred the Constitution. Certainly the Second Amendment. Probably the first two. Free speech. Try telling James O'Keefe that there's free speech in the United States. All that he did was expose CNN for the frauds that they are. And who gets canceled? CNN? No, James O'Keefe. Of course. It makes perfect sense. Says Twitter, says Facebook. We don't want you to know what CNN really and truly thinks of you when the microphone is turned off, when they're not in front of the camera. We don't want you. We've got a cover for them. They're all liars. They all look down at you. They have contempt for ordinary Americans. They have contempt for the Constitution. They are fully supportive of the Black Lives Matter Marxist movement. And look, BLM makes no apology for that. They're proud of, they're here to destroy family, among other things. Here, this founder of the movement, she's got four houses all over the world. She's talking about how capitalism is the problem. Well, she's benefiting from it, I'd say. Four houses, looking for one in the Bahamas? And no one calls her out. A few conservative voices, that's about it. Candace Owens maybe with the tweet. These people are hypocrites. And they're destroying the country. That's the seriousness of it. They want to destroy everything that America has stood for a couple centuries. Of course, it was God who made America great. But he had a hand in some of those founding fathers that brought together these unique documents. that helped to establish the single greatest superpower in the history of the world. And that's all being dismantled. That's all being torn down. Listen to Senator Markey from yesterday, clip 12.
And the way we repair it is straightforward. We undo the damage that the Republicans have done by restoring balance. And we do it by adding 4 seats to the court to create a 13-member Supreme Court. These 4 new seats to be filled by President Biden will reconstitute the United States Supreme Court.
Reconstitute, he says. I'm losing my voice again, guys. Get ready for a short little promo. Maybe a longer one. We'll see. We'll hold out here for a second. We'll reconstitute the court, he says. That's a nice-sounding word. Nadler says, look, we're not packing it. We're unpacking it. We're helping it. We're restoring balance. This is what they do in banana republics. One last clip from Senator Markey yesterday, clip 13.
We must expand the court, and we must abolish the filibuster to do it. The words etched above the main entrance of the Supreme Court building behind us express the ultimate responsibility of the court: equal justice under the law. But how will there be equal justice when seats on the court have been stolen? How will it be equal justice when Republicans have purposefully warped and weaponized the highest court of the land for their own partisan gain?
What?
That's right. Say it with me. I'm with Oprah on this one. Weaponize the court, really? The Republicans have purposely warped and weaponized the Supreme Court. They've stolen seats. How do they steal seats? How do they steal it? Did Vladimir Putin help them get in Amy Coney Barrett? Or Gorsuch? This all happened during Trump's term. The Constitution says he nominates. And then the votes were there. That's the way that it works. And here they come along. They don't care about the Constitution. And everything they're accusing the other side of is exactly what they're doing. Packing the court, shredding the Constitution. They can say it until they're blue in the face. It's the other side that's the problem. But here they are. How bold and audacious of them. As I said yesterday, I mean, they're just right in your face. If it's this police shooting, look, he's going to jail. If it's this police shooting, well, he's free to go. Nothing to worry about here. The two-tiered standard of justice, or system of justice. And then they've got the media, the lapdogs in the media. They're there to just pat them on the back. They love it. They would love to see the court packed, the media. And they're quite happy to help promote the lies, or in some cases, cover up the lies. They don't want CNN to be exposed as frauds. So out goes James O'Keefe. You know, there was a story yesterday about this Russian bounty. This came up over the summer last year. There was supposedly Putin put out a bounty for American troops in Afghanistan. And the radical leftist Marxist media, they were outraged that President Trump at the time wasn't standing up to Putin. He wasn't doing anything. Listen to this montage from the Daily Caller, clip 4.
In our worldly today, President Trump dismissing the Russian bounty intelligence story as a hoax meant to damage him and Republicans. The president often touts his relationship with his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin.
The White House also responding tonight to a bombshell report accusing Russia of offering bounties to the Taliban to kill American soldiers in Afghanistan.
And now you know from this reporting in the New York Times, which has since been confirmed by the Wall Street Journal, that not only does the president know that Russia was paying for American soldiers' deaths,
News. Get this. The Washington Post is now reporting that the alleged Russian bounties to Taliban fighters in Afghanistan are believed to have resulted in the deaths of U.S. troops.
Like this New York Times story about a stunning U.S. intel assessment, finding that Russia secretly offered Afghan militants bounties to kill U.S. troops.
So comes under fire over those bombshell reports that the White House was told Russia was paying bounties to kill U.S. troops in Afghanistan.
Wow, another bombshell brought to you by the New York Times. This is from the Daily Caller, or sorry, the Daily Beast. That's more to the left, but at least they're coming forward to correct the record. It says on Thursday, the Biden administration announced that U.S. intelligence only had low to moderate confidence in the story, after all. Translated from the jargon of spy world, that means the intelligence agencies have found the story is, at best, unproven and possibly untrue. It's not even true. No evidence. There's no evidence. No evidence of voter fraud. Why are you bringing it up? They're so self-righteous. When they don't agree with it, when they don't want you to talk about it, and so audacious and blatant in their willingness to run with a lie, even when there's absolutely no evidence. The Daily Beast says there were reasons to doubt the story from the start. Not only did the initial stories emphasize its basis on detainee reporting, but the bounties represented a qualitative shift in recent Russian engagements with Afghan insurgents. You know, and at the time, President Trump was saying, this is not true. It's a hoax. It's a fraud. And they wouldn't let it go. And of course, he was right in the midst of a campaign for president. Listen to what Joe Biden said in October of last year, clip 5. Do we have clip 5?
The President of the United States, knowing that the intelligence community already told him that Putin is putting a bounty on the heads of American soldiers in Afghanistan, spoke to Putin 6 times, hadn't said a single thing to him. I don't know what Putin has on him, but why won't he say something?
Why won't he say something about the bounty? Well, maybe because it's fake news. Maybe that's why he didn't say anything about the bounty. There was Joe Biden. He took it and ran with it. Working hard to keep that face mask on. This was right before the presidential election. Just one of many lies. Or lies that were covered up in the case of the laptop and all of that. Anything and everything that they could do to try to help Joe Biden steal the election. And that was revealed in James O'Keefe's reporting, his undercover reporting. The CNN technical director who admitted, yes, we were spewing out propaganda. Yes, we were doing everything that we could to make Donald Trump look like he was sick and feeble and deranged. And yes, we were covering up for Joe Biden. That's what they say when they're not in front of the camera. But you can't reveal that, not without getting canceled. So James O'Keefe is off of Twitter. He's banned for these. You want to talk about bombshell revelations? These are bombshell revelations that James O'Keefe has revealed. Here's one from his series of videos this week, clip 6.
I was trying to do some research on like the Asian hate, like you know, the people are getting attacked or a bunch of black men that have been attacking Asian. So I'm like, what are you doing? Like we're trying to like help like with the BLM, like we're gonna like. I mean, it's individuals. It's not a people, you know. That's not good. The optics of that are not good.
So there's the CNN technical. You've got all of these attacks. African-Americans attacking Asian-Americans. They're happening practically every day. You'll see them in the outer reaches of social media. But you're not going to see them on CNN because the optics of it are not good. Look, we're trying to help the BLM movement. So we can't show blacks violently attacking Asians. That would work against us. It would work against BLM. I mean, that's a pretty candid admission. At least it was admitted privately. Here's another one, clip 7.
You can shape an entire people's perception about anything on how you do it, right? Like,
how do you do that?
Just by, forcing a story to help, your platform, you know?
Yeah, you can shape people's perception. How? By forcing a story? Oh, really? That's how CNN thinks. That's what CNN thinks about the truth. And just reporting the truth. You see the mentality. It's not just CNN. You've heard it earlier this week. Those reporters that were just badgering the police chief, the former police chief at Brooklyn Center, saying, how dare you say it was a riot? It's not a riot. There they are lecturing public officials. And there he is saying, well, of course we can shape people's perception. We'll just force the story down their throat. My father had an article last year, A Dangerous New Age of Worshiping the Will. It says here, we have not, well, he uses the example of Hitler. And the lies, just tell it as often as you can, and pretty soon people will believe it. You see the same mentality in many, many in the propaganda media. My father says, we've not learned from this history as we should. Could something similar happen today? Could it happen in America? Could someone stir up a political revolution simply by repeating a blatant lie over and over and over until people come to believe it? Could this really happen in the United States of America? You're seeing it happen. We see it happen every day. It says we must be concerned about this. Without a free and truthful media, a republic cannot survive. Should I repeat that? Without a free and truthful media, a republic cannot survive. Listen to what this CNN technical director said about the COVID-19 pandemic, clip 8.
COVID, gangbusters were raiders. Gangbusters were raiders, right? Which is why we constantly have the death toll on the side. Let's make it higher. Why isn't it high enough, you know, today? It would make our point better if it was higher.
It's fear. Fear really drives numbers. Fear is the thing that keeps you tuned in.
Yeah, we got to frighten everyone. We need the death ticker on the side. We need higher numbers. I mean, this is gangbusters for the ratings. And then, of course, once Biden gets in, the death ticker is immediately taken off and the ratings plummet, but they're fine. Because look, in the end, it's all about the radical leftist agenda. Chris Cuomo's ratings are down 45%. But he's going to still have a job. It's no problem. He's going to still draw his salary because he's helping. He's helping carry out the attack. He's a revolutionary. They went on to say this, or this technical director of CNN, clip 9.
I've been in the room many a times where my director tells me, take it down. Special red phone ring.
Yeah.
And they pick it up, and this producer picks it up. And you're, mow, 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 mow. And every so often they put it on speaker. And it's like the head of the network being like, there's nothing that you're doing right now that makes me want to stick. Put the numbers back up, because that's the most enticing thing that we have. So put it back up.
Put it back up. Get the scaremongering back in action. This is not something that's happening by accident. As you hear there, this is a premeditated attack. This is a plan. It's all fakery. It's all lies. And what do we know about the spirit of lying and deceit? What do we know about the God of this world? What do we know about the father of lies and murder? Well, we know that that's our adversary, the devil. And his spirit of lying and deception is so strong. And he desperately wants to blot out even the name of Israel. And he's willing to do anything to bring that about. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to submit some feedback on the programming note that we talked about at the top of the segment, you can write us at td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Every particle of human suffering, unhappiness, misery, and death has come solely from the transgression of God's immutable law. Obedience to God's law liberates us from all unhappiness, pain, and suffering. It frees us from captivity, from spiritual slavery. Obeying God's commandments guarantees a life overflowing with joyful abundance. For much more on this subject, request a free copy of The Ten Commandments. When you make your request, don't forget to enroll in the Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course. This 36-lesson course is a distance learning program that will help you to get to know your Bible. Each month, you will receive a lesson that guides you in discovering the answers to life's most important questions, all from your own Bible. Your enrollment has already been paid for. Enroll today. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
So yesterday we started our study of Hebrews 11, this faith chapter, as many call it. So much wonderful instruction there and powerful examples of living faith. Hebrews 11:1, just to repeat, it says, "Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen." As we noted yesterday, faith comes before the possession. Faith is the assurance that you will have it, assuming it's God's will. And if you're willing to trust Him and wait patiently. Verse 6, "But without faith, it's impossible to please Him. For he that comes to God must believe that he is, and that he's a rewarder of them that diligently seek him." God rewards diligent seekers. Those who diligently seek after God and his way, his will, he will reward us. Goes through some examples there with Noah and Abraham and Sarah. Verse 13, I read this yesterday right at the end. It says, "These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, and were persuaded of them, and embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims in the earth." I didn't emphasize the last bit there. The way that they conducted themselves, like strangers and pilgrims, they were just passing through. They weren't attached to the things of this world. They weren't materialistic. Many of them managed estates and such while they were alive physically. But they looked to New Jerusalem. Their hearts were set on God and His kingdom. You think of that young man that went away sorrowful in Matthew 19 because he couldn't give up his physical things to serve Jesus Christ. He couldn't do it. You can't have it both ways. Matthew 6 goes through that as well. You either love mammon and the things of this world, or you love God more. You seek God first and His kingdom and His righteousness first. It can't be the other way. I read this quote from the healing booklet about Peter and Stephen, Philip, Paul, all these ordinary men that had extraordinary faith. And Mr. Armstrong went on to say, and we seem to lack that power today. Not because God denies us that power, but because we are so close to a modern materialistic world. Our minds are so filled with the material interests of this life. Our minds and our hearts are so far from God. We're so out of touch with Him through lack of enough time spent in study of His Word and lack of enough of the right kind of surrendered, submissive, earnest, and heartrending prayer. And consequently, because we're not filled with the Holy Spirit, which affords us the power of God. That's why we don't have this kind of dynamic and living faith, Mr. Armstrong said, because we're not as close to God. We're too close to the world and the ways of this world. We're too close to the material interests of this world. Paul goes on in verse 14, it says here, for people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. That's from the Revised Standard Version. I mean, they're ambassadors for Christ, in other words. They're here as Christ's earthly representatives. Their citizenship is in heaven. So you can see even from some of this why even though we have so much to say about politics and news and developments in world affairs, that at the same time we really don't get involved. Because we represent Christ's government. We represent the government of God. That's who we are, God's people, God's family. Verse 15 says, and truly, if they had been mindful of that country from whence they came out, they might have had opportunity to have returned. If our minds are only on the world that we left behind, then eventually we're going to return there. It's like Lot's wife. She just couldn't let it go. She looked back longingly. And Jesus in the New Testament said, remember Lot's wife. Because there's a lot of people today that just cannot let the world go. They just cannot leave it behind. They just cannot leave it behind and move on. The pull is too strong. But you look at these examples here. Noah left. He left the world behind and just started building the ark. Abraham got up and left his home city, and he just followed God. He just followed God wherever God would take him. Verse 16, it says, but now they desire a better country, that is, an heavenly. Wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. See, again, speaking of New Jerusalem, Abraham was given that preview, as I said yesterday. But these people were thinking ahead, and that's the problem with those of us that struggle with faithlessness today, is that we don't think far enough ahead. We don't think beyond the here and now. We don't see where this awesome purpose and plan is leading. Proverbs says, without vision, we'll perish spiritually. We've got to be visionaries. Verse 17, it says, by faith, Abraham, when he was tried, offered up Isaac, that he that had received the promises offered up his only begotten son. He offered up his own son, the son of promise. And Isaac, for his part, laid down his life as a sacrifice. You see the Isaac-Jesus Christ similarities. Abraham, a type of God the Father. And in his mind, the son was as good as gone. That's brought out in this passage. That's brought out here. Notice the word offered is past tense. I mean, Abraham had the knife, and in his mind, he was ready to bring it down and to slay his son. God stopped him at the last minute, or the last second. Verse 18, it describes what was going on in Abraham's mind. It says, of whom it was said that in Isaac shall your seed be called, accounting that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from whence also he received him in a figure. So it doesn't say any of this in the Genesis account. But here Paul, under the inspiration of God, is revealing the attitude that Abraham had. Abraham just concluded, and think about this from the standpoint of faith. He thought, okay, here's this son of promise. God had promised him. We waited 25 years for him. Millions are to come out from him, his loins. And now God wants me to kill him, to sacrifice him? Well, that must mean God's going to raise him right back to life. And at that point in the story, at that point in the Genesis account, nobody had been resurrected to physical life yet. There would be instances of that later. But what an attitude. And what does that say about his faith? Well, God made me. God's the one that brought me into existence. God's the one that breathes into my nostrils the breath of life. It's no problem for God to take someone and to just bring them right back to life. Now, that's some kind of faith. That's living faith. Verse 20, it says, by faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. Again, they were all very, very much future-oriented. By verse 21, by faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed both the sons of Joseph and worshipped, leaning upon the top of his staff. He was about to die, but he was thinking about God's purpose. He was thinking about those birthright blessings. He was thinking about the future. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but they did see them afar off. They certainly did. Verse 22, it says, by faith, Joseph, when he died, made mention of the departing of the children of Israel and gave commandment concerning his bones. Joseph was second in charge in Egypt, right under Pharaoh. And yet, as he's dying, he didn't look on Egypt as his home. He told the Israelites, you carry my bones into the land of Canaan. You take my bones with you. My history is with you. My future is with you. That's someone who very easily could have said, you know what? Egypt's the most powerful nation in the world. I think I'll stay right here. I think I'll just continue to climb the ladder here. Look at how powerful I am. But he didn't want any of that. Verse 23, it says, by faith, Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents. I mean, they had faith too, because they saw he was a proper child, and they were not afraid of the king's commandment. They just sent their three-month-old down a river in a basket. They knew God would take care of him, and he did. He certainly did. Verse 24, by faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Like I say, he could have ascended too to the throne of Egypt. Moses, Joseph, these were powerful men. Even in the worldly sense. And yet their hearts were with God. Verse 25 says, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. So here Egypt is, of course, pictured in the Bible as a type of sin. And Moses, instead of the temporary pleasure that's there or associated with sin, Moses chose rather the afflictions brought upon the Israelites. He chose rather to suffer affliction with the people of God. He did that in faith. And Romans 8, of course, talks about the sufferings of this present life and says that they're not even worthy to be compared to the future, to the blessings, to the inheritance. Verse 26, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. He sacrificed those sinful pleasures. There is some pleasure that comes with sin. It's just short-lived. It never lasts. There's always a boomerang effect. There's curses that set in after. Moses forsook all of that and instead chose the reproach of Christ, and he had his mind on the greater rewards that God was going to give him in the kingdom. Verse 27, it says, "By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible." What kept him going? Well, he had his vision on the invisible. Just like Abraham with the city of New Jerusalem, here is Moses. He had his sights set on the invisible God. He's called that over in 1 Timothy 1 and verse 17. King eternal, immortal, invisible, the only wise God. This is the God we worship. This is the God we follow. This is our maker, our creator. This is the God over all. Verse 28, it says, "Through faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, lest he that destroyed the firstborn should touch them." It took faith to observe the Passover and to follow all of those instructions God gave to them faithfully, meticulously. And of course, it takes faith to keep the Passover today. We've got to have faith in those symbols. Verse 29, it says, "By faith they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, which the Egyptians essaying to do were drowned." So Pharaoh and his army representing sin, the sin of Egypt, representing the devil and his army, they were all drowned in the Red Sea. Not one Egyptian was able to save himself. All the Israelites walked through like it was dry ground. It was dry ground. God dried it up. He didn't just divide the waters. He dried up the bottom of the sea. And Israel walked through. And then when the Egyptians walked through, they all of them drown. God just completely wiped them out. That's what he wants us to do with sin. Just get rid of it entirely. Just completely remove it. Of course, Satan and his demon army, they're about to be completely removed from this world upon the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. And they'll be locked away. They'll be removed. Finally, this world will have rest from that satanic influence. Finally, this world will have a rest from the devil and his demon army. Verse 30 says, "By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they were compassed about 7 days." Here again, they had to follow some pretty precise instruction. 7 days, they circled around the city, and then the walls came tumbling down. It says in verse 31, "By faith, the harlot Rahab perished, not with them that believe not, when she had received the spies with peace." As I was saying in class the other day, here she's still referred to as a harlot. And my father makes the point in the James booklet that in God's kingdom, God's not going to rub that, you know, that title, that tag in Rahab's face for eternity. She's been washed. She's been cleaned. When she comes up in the resurrection, she's going to have an exalted position in God's family. But here in the New Testament and the Old Testament, she's referred to as Rahab the harlot, a prostitute. She sold her body for sex. She sold her body for money. And God is telling us today, look, whatever it is in your past, and she obviously left it in the past and moved on with God. Whatever it is, leave it behind and go forward in faith. And God will reward you. God will bless you. Verse 32, it says, "And what shall I say more? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah and David also and Samuel and the prophet." He hasn't even gotten time to get to David yet. I'd say the Bible's a wonderful book. So much encouragement, so much instruction, so much admonition, so much faith-building content. It says in verse 33, who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions. It's like King David. Quenched the violence of fire, like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They went right into a fiery furnace. They were fully prepared to die in order to obey the commandments of God. And yet God miraculously intervened and spared them, even in the midst of a fiery furnace. Escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, waxed valiant in fight, turned to flight the armies of the aliens. Women, it says in verse 35, received their dead, raised to life again, and others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. See, why did they do it? How did they do it? How did they endure so much? Well, they had living faith, and they had their sights set on a better resurrection. There is such a thing as a better resurrection. The first resurrection, resurrected to a glorified spirit body. Now, the second resurrection is certainly a hope-filled reality as well. The billions upon billions coming up after the millennium in a physical resurrection to have an opportunity to live in the flesh and to obey the commandments of God, an opportunity that you have right in front of you this moment if you're viewing this broadcast. You can do it now and qualify for a much greater reward because of it, and qualify for a much better resurrection. As it says right here in verse 35. Verse 36 says, and others had trial of cruel mockings and scourgings. Yes, moreover, of bonds and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn asunder, were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented. That's a lot of struggling and suffering that some of these heroes in the Bible endured, but it was worth it. In the end, you think in God's kingdom, when they're resurrected to immortal spirit life, you think they'll have any regrets? Verse 38, it says, of whom the world was not worthy, they wandered in deserts and in mountains and in dens and caves of the earth. The world's not even worthy of them. You think of the ones that are celebrated today or nearly worshipped today. These are the heroes. These are the real and true celebrities. These individuals listed off in the book of Hebrews. It says in verse 39, and these all, having obtained a good report, through faith received not the promise, just like it says in verse 13. They died not having received the promises, but they lived for the time that they were on this earth in the flesh. They lived by faith. They had living faith. Verse 40 says, God having provided some better things for us, that they without us should not be made perfect. The Living Bible says, for God wanted them to wait and share the even better rewards that were prepared for us. So we in the church today, we're going to complete this first fruits harvest. This plan, this purpose, this initial stage of it, it's not complete without us. In that sense, they're waiting on us. They're not alive. They're dead and buried. But they're going to be part of that first fruits resurrection at the return of Christ. Will you be part of that resurrection, that better resurrection? Mr. Armstrong said, this is the age that counts. This is the age. This is the age. You think it's amazing, some of these stories, what they endured, what they qualified for. But think about what God's offering us. This is the age that counts. This is the age that is preparing the ones that I think will be foremost in helping Jesus Christ when he comes to initiate and start a new civilization on this earth. We're going to be helping him. We're going to be assisting him. And so it's worth it to endure sufferings and trials and tests. It's worth it. It's certainly worth it to live and to walk by faith, the faith of Jesus Christ. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to submit feedback, you can write us, td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us on today's show. Thanks for joining us all week, and we'll see you next week.